good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matinee on Air. Jane Matinee, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up a little bit later on after 11 o'clock, in the Tom Hartman Show, you want to be listening for the keyword that you want to text in. We are in the midst of our statewide Sconny Summer Text to Win contest every day through this week. In the 7, 11, 2, and 4 o'clock hours, you will have a keyword you want to text in using the Civic Media app, and you're in the running either for $100 in cash or a pair of Milwaukee Brewers Club tickets. And then the grand prize is a Wisconsin summer vacation in either Door County or Baraboo with money to get you there.
Nice.
Four daily chances to enter now through this Friday. So again, be listening after 11 o'clock in the Tom Hartman Show for your keyword for our Sconny Summer Statewide Text to Win contest. Going to start off just briefly with this, because there was a lot of news that happened over the weekend. And this happened on Friday, which I think kind of got buried by everything happening in Los Angeles and Donald Trump calling in the National Guard and all of those things. But the headline from the Wisconsin Examiner says, wrongly deported Maryland man Abrego Garcia returned to the U.S. You may recall many Trump administration officials saying out loud, he's not coming back. There's no way to bring him back.
Nope.
El Salvador is a sovereign country. We have nothing to do with it. He is in their custody. That's it. He's there.
The president said, I have no power to bring him back.
Yeah, that was not true. He's back.
Yep.
Abrego Garcia landed in the U.S. on Friday. Now they are accusing him of being a human smuggler. Originally, he was an MS-13 gang member.
Yes.
Right?
Correct. Yep. They had a court said absolutely without equivocation that he had no proof that he was part of a gang. So it was just pushing a narrative over. And we heard people say he's in a gang, but there's no proof that he was in a gang.
Yeah, it's that whole proof thing. But again, a Maryland Democrat, Chris Van Hollen, says, as I have repeatedly said, this is not about the man. It's about his constitutional rights and the rights of all.
Yes.
So, again, if he is found guilty of these things, then deport him. I don't have a problem with that. The problem I have is with our government snatching people off the streets and deporting them without putting them through due process to which they are entitled, citizen or not.
Correct. Yep. We spoke at great length with Jim Santel, with Judge Paul Michel about this. The Constitution does not, one, the Constitution does not just cover, well, if it says all, it means anyone. Also, there's no such thing as habeas corpus for some. It's for all or
it's
none.
It's for all or
and
none.
And it either is in effect or is not effect. It can't just be like, well, Jane, we like you, so you get some habeas corpus, but Calvin, you don't get any habeas corpus because we don't like your glasses. So that's not how it works.
No, that is not how it works.
No.
So at least, again, Kilmar Abrego Garcia is back in the United States. He returned on Friday. Contrary to all the things that the Trump administration told us, no, there's nothing we can do. He's there. He's never coming back. Oh, now he's back.
Well, now he's back, and now he's more dangerous than ever. And
right.
We should have just wrote a list of other suspected crimes of Kilmar Abrego Garcia. That was because before it was MS-13, that was just it, even though there was no proof, and the court said that. And he was a protected person in this country.
And from Maryland, yep.
But now he's come back, and he is just, I mean, he's back in America, and he's done all these things. And it's just, okay, you're just going to pile on all these claims, not charges.
Not proof.
Not convictions, but just, you know, as you said, Jane, bring him back. Let him face the
Let him go through his due process,
yeah,
and then take it from there.
Yeah.
But I did see another, and just briefly because we're going to move on, but I did see another article this morning that said 25% so far of the people that ICE have taken into custody have no criminal records.
And they know that, too. Like, This is willy-nilly. Pulling people up at graduation ceremonies, at hospitals, and in courtrooms. And this is not the way to do things.
I thought the whole goal was to get rid of dangerous felons.
Mm-hmm. Or just people.
Dangerous criminals.
Or people who are here illegally or didn't go through the process. I also understand that motive as well. But yeah, the criminals were the number one problem. They were
got to get the criminals off the street.
If we don't get the criminals off the street, then the streets aren't safe, Jane. And what are we going to do? But no, it just seems willy-nilly.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. Okay, we're going to move on to things a little bit more local and talk about the Wisconsin state budget.
Oh, great.
Robin Voss, Speaker of the Assembly, on Upfront on Channel 12 yesterday, speaking to Matt Smith. Robin Voss says it's a lie that the Republicans refuse to invest in education and child care as the budget talks break down. Robin Voss telling WISN's Upfront, we're willing to do it, just not as much as Governor Evers wanted. That's the difference. He makes it sound like we were at zero. We were not at zero on any of these topics. We tried to find a way to invest in childcare that actually went to the parents and to make sure that we weren't just having to go to a business. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But what the Republicans suggested that we talked about last week was giving a tax incentive to businesses to open childcare centers.
Correct. And
or did I imagine that?
No, we talked about it. There was an article. I know I posted that article in the show notes. But like there are a bunch of components to this matter. And we've had Corrine Hendrickson on many times. She's been on many shows here on the Civic Media Network. And it's about incentivizing the businesses that run the daycare centers themselves. One of their big things is giving some money to release so they don't have to keep raising their prices.
Right.
To pay their people a little bit more, not millions of dollars a year, but I think they said their target was to get them at $13, which is quite reasonable in my opinion. And for the work they do, still underpaid, but also, yeah, like there's the parents, there are the businesses. And I mean, I don't actually have a problem with them incentivizing companies to open up their own daycare centers, but that shouldn't be the only thing they're doing.
Right.
Which seems like the only thing they're doing.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any other things suggested from the Republicans, and I would love to see more businesses step up to this, but yeah, the fact that we're not seeing that makes you wonder if this is a good enough incentive.
I think it's a misdirected incentive. It comes back to the age-old thing of, like, they just want to help businesses. They think businesses can do it right. But what's weird is that, I don't know, Corrine Hendrickson and all of her colleagues, they're business owners.
They are business owners.
They employ people. They're job creators. They contribute to the economy. And if you give them the ability to run their business well, and you know, I don't think any of them are looking for handouts that will allow them to become billionaires.
No.
But you allow them to have a partnership with the state that runs a solid business, then it's going to be a net gain for the parents, a net gain for the child, a net gain for those businesses. Because I bet you a lot of those businesses who are not in childcare are like, I don't want to open a daycare. Do you know what will happen if I do that? Or what I have to do in order to get that to happen.
So, yeah.
It's Robin Voss. Robin Voss always says no, even when he says he's saying yes. So I don't trust him as far as I can throw him.
Well, and the other thing that kind of jumped out at me during this conversation, again, Robin Voss and Upfront on WISN yesterday talking to Matt Smith, who does a great job. But Robin Voss never once talked specifics.
No.
He never talked actual numbers.
No.
So it's just the governor asked for too much. We didn't give him what he wanted, so the governor walked away. Well, we'd like a little more specifics about what you offered him in these deals.
Yeah, well, one of the things they said, you know, in the education portion of the conversation with regard to the UW system, he said that they want to require professors to work 12 hours to show they're working at least 12 credits.
One of the things we wanted was a guarantee you'd have every professor teaching at least 12 credits. So 12 hours in the classroom for a full-time job. And they just couldn't get there. Robin, maybe let's not talk about full-time jobs.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Well, also, Do you know what it takes to be a professor at a college level? It's like, it's, you're brought to a, you're usually, if I'm not mistaken, because I have friends who've taught in college, you can be an associate professor, you can be a teacher, you're teaching classes, but some of these professors are there because they were brought by the university to do research.
And write papers,
be published, and raise the profile of those universities. So, yeah, they'll teach, but they're not going to teach all the classes. That's why you have TAs and assistants, and that's why, like, the system's in place to do it. I mean, my parents didn't want me to go to college and say, like, but you better make sure that you're being taught by teachers. That's not how this works. And so his concern all of a sudden for the way the UW system is, it just seems – but then again, this is the same guy who said, we gave more money to the public school system than anyone else in a generation. Yeah, because they were getting nothing before.
For a decade.
Yeah, if you're giving them $5, that's more.
Yeah. Robin Voss also said that we want tax relief for the middle class, and we believe that it should be something focused on retirees – keeping more people in Wisconsin by having a lower tax burden and hopefully not having people move to a warmer climate for 6 months a year.
Yeah, that also doesn't make sense to me. And if there's anybody who's listening who
is a snowbird,
who lives in Florida or is Arizona for anywhere 3 to 6 months a year to get away from the winter, I get it. My mom's slowly going that way too. But as far as I know, my mom in her retirement, she's not a citizen of Arizona. She's a citizen of Wisconsin. So any taxes that are incurred on her behalf that she has to pay,
she pays in Wisconsin.
So I don't know what this means. Either it is, once again, a nice Robin Voss workaround where he's just saying a bunch of words that sounds smart, or he is truly ignorant to how people pay taxes.
Yeah, we were talking about this before we came on the air, too. And again, so for 6 months, they're not going to pay sales taxes here.
Correct, yeah.
But is it... if you are a snowbird, I'm curious to know, would you not go to Florida for 6 months if your taxes were lower?
Yeah. Well, they want to, like, do a thing of, like, it's no tax on $75,000 a year, like your first $75,000 a year, which at the end of the day, for me personally, it's Robin Voss. So it's always when they say tax cuts for the middle class, it's really not. It's tax cuts for their buddies, for their donors, for themselves.
Pretty much.
I have yet to see a real plan from the Republicans that gives a solid tax cut, not just for retirees. No offense, retirees. I want you to get your money, get your bag, kids. But also tax cuts for, you know, like for me and my wife, we don't have children, so we miss out on a child tax credit.
Yep.
Just a basic middle-class tax cut that benefits us all. Show me the work. Show me the money. Show me how you're going to get it done. Don't just go on TV and talk about how Tony Evers can't be worked with.
Robin also says he's not overly concerned with the massive tax and spending plan moving through Congress, despite projections it will affect Medicaid and food share. Robin Voss says, I'm not all that worried. It's an exaggeration for my friends on the left. There are not cuts in Medicaid. When they tell you there are cuts, it's untrue. Okay. We're going to return after the break and talk about someone who worked for DOGE and the vast waste, fraud, and abuse he found. That's all on the way. Stay close. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 9:30 news, Matt Randolph, Mr. Global Oil and Gas Industry Expert, will be joining us as he does every quarter now.
Yeah.
So stick around for Matt Randolph coming up after the 9:30 news. Right now, though, we were talking about Robin Voss appearing on Upfront on WISN over the weekend and talking about all the waste and fraud and abuse in the federal government. And I just wanted to do this quickly before we get to some really important things in the budget.
Ah, yes, yes.
A former employee of DOGE said he found federal waste, fraud, and abuse were relatively non-existent.
What?
Sahil Lavinga told NPR, I personally was pretty surprised, actually, at how efficient the government is. Lavinga is a software developer. He joined Doge in March. He told NPR he just really wanted to make government websites easier. That's why they brought him in. I thought, cool. This is cool.
Yeah.
But he says, in working there, I did not find the federal government to be rife with waste, fraud, and abuse. I was expecting some more easy wins. I was hoping for an opportunity to cut waste, fraud, and abuse. I do believe there's a lot of waste. There are minimal amounts of fraud, and abuse to me feels relatively non-existent. We talked about this before. Again, it's easy to say we keep finding waste, fraud, and abuse. Fraud is a crime.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then I would like to see these cases move forward in the courts from all these people who are committing fraud mm-hmm. and getting benefits they're not supposed to.
It just seems like all the wasteful spending they did seem to find either was being done, quote unquote, done by departments that had who Elon Musk had a vested interest in staying away from, or social programs that just seem to help the people.
Yeah.
And for minimal money in terms of government spending, when you're talking about like millions,
even $5 million is nothing.
Seven digit to even low eight digit numbers. That's nothing in government spending. And to attack those programs, and they're usually social programs,
yes,
helping the, wait for it, the poor, it just seems more targeted and, I don't know, just mean. I know that sounds very childlike, but it's doing it because those individuals have no power. They don't have the ear of a senator or
And who's going to fight for them?
Exactly.
Who's going to fight for them?
You can't, nobody, because they fired everyone who could fight for them.
Well, thankfully,
yeah,
there is someone out there to fight for the tanning bed people.
Who?
The tanning bed people.
Are they a huge lobby that
this came up over the weekend? They slipped, you know, a couple of things in that big budget bill. Ugh. We did mention them last week.
Yeah.
But Calvin, I believe we have a clip from Speaker of the House Mike Johnson talking about tanning beds and this break we're going to give tanning bed owners. Let's take a listen.
Right to. What about tanning beds? It eliminates a 10% tax on tanning beds. I mean, how did that become a priority for
you? I think that was an unfair thing that the Biden administration put on industry because they decided.
It was actually, it goes back to 2010.
Yeah.
It's been around for 15 years.
Long time.
But the Biden administration enhanced it. And there'll be modifications probably to that in the final package as well. But we'll see how it comes out.
What?
I love that. Biden did this. Well, Obama actually implemented it, and it was for health reasons too. Wasn't
yes.
just because they hated.
And there were lots
beds.
Of health groups that signed on to this.
But Biden enhanced it. How? Biden? Oh my gosh! Like, it must be great to be Barack Obama, because before it was all him. Thanks, Obama. Obama did this. It's Obama.
Now it's all Biden's fault.
Oh my gosh, I stubbed my toe. Well, because of Biden's policies,
right?
I stubbed my toe on my bed because my bed is too small. You know. Listening to him, and honestly, he's in similar jobs. When I listen to him or Robin Voss try to weasel their way out of policies, they're just, let's face it, this one's ridiculous. This is ridiculous to just be like, well, it's Biden. This is because of
Biden. That's their go-to.
Yeah.
That's the go-to excuse for everything. Also slipped in this bill is a little thing about gun silencers, which I know Wisconsin's Joint Finance Committee heard all about when they went around traveling around Wisconsin and all the people who came forward pro-gun silencer. Calvin, let's play that clip, please.
One, there's a provision that eliminates a tax on gun silencers. Now, this is a tax that has been on the books for about 100 years.
Long time.
Why are you suddenly cutting a tax on silencers?
Well, there's a lot of thought and deliberation that went into that as well. The Second Amendment is a critical freedom in the Constitution, and there's no real rationale for adding taxes on these pieces of equipment. And we had the votes to do it. I think it was a long time overdue. I think we have to protect the fundamental freedoms of the American people, and there's no rationale. The government should not be making money on something that you have a fundamental inalienable right to.
Hold on one second here. I'm just going to look up. I just want the second Amendment. I just want to read this.
Yeah, bring up the Second Amendment.
Unless they've amended the amendment, the Second Amendment of the Constitution protects the the text says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to secure the free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Nothing in here about silencers.
That's because they didn't exist when they wrote
silencers.
That.
It would have been really, I mean, it was hard to load a gun back in those days. Could you imagine attaching a silencer to a musket?
Yeah.
I don't really see this as a free and fundamental thing. It's taxes.
I believe that this legislation was authored by a Republican in the House who owns a gun shop.
That's right. He does. That's right. Yeah. Yes.
Just one of those little things they slipped in there. So, Wisconsinites, let's call our Republican representatives who all voted for this measure and just ask them about the tanning bed thing and the gun silencer thing. If you're not sure how to contact them, go to myvote.wi.gov. Myvote.wi.gov. Let's call Robin Voss. Well, not Robin Voss. Call Scott Fitzgerald and Brian Stile and all our other Republicans. Call Glenn Grothman and ask him. He's using tanning beds, isn't he? That's who this is for. News is coming up next. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Calvi on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Delighted to have him back Mondays with Mr. Global. Matt Randolph is here, oil and gas industry expert. Good morning, Matt. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
We are good. Thank you. Good to see you again. Lots of things going on. Just a couple. We wanted to start. I know. I thought we would start, Matt, with the Secretary of the Interior, Doug Burgum, visited Alaska. And I've seen some things, some chatter about the Trans-Alaska LNG pipeline. So that's why Doug Burgum was there, talking about how great this is, and it's all about making America energy dependent, and we're going to drill, drill, drill. And so what do you know about this Trans-Alaska pipeline?
Well, you know, first of all, the administration keeps pushing these projects that could have easily been done anytime in the last 50 years if they were actually economically viable. Like, they just keep, you know, this thing in Alaska with the LNG, wanting to double oil production, build another pipeline. There's been no real restrictions there that would have ever stopped anyone from doing that if they thought it was the best place to invest their money. So I just want to say that right off the bat.
Sure. But,
the vast majority of, you know, this project would all just be gas that would be exported out of the country. It wouldn't help, you know, as far as energy goes, it wouldn't help the United States at all. It would make corporations a few billion dollars, I'm sure. But this is all for export, like everything else we do now is to export.
And I think that's really important that folks understand that, because, again, If you don't dig too deeply into some of this stuff, it sounds pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, let's get another pipeline, and this is going to help America become energy independent, and gas prices will come down and all of that stuff. But when you dig a little deeper into it, as you said, this is just a transportation portal for fuel to leave the United States. But first, it gets to cross the United States, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know the economics of it, but I have serious doubts about whether this is even economically feasible. You're talking about basically one company would be producing natural gas and having to build one singular 700-mile pipeline across the state of Alaska to get this gas to an LNG terminal just to send. You know, we've built LNG terminals all across the Gulf Coast, and that's because there's just tons of existing infrastructure there to support that. There's tons of pipelines already there, you know, from offshore and the Northeast Corridor. Everything anyone would need to do that is already there. They're going to have to build this from scratch. And I just don't see how it's economically feasible. But you did say one thing. I don't know if you heard my new catchphrase. It makes sense if you don't think about it, right? You kind of touched on that a second ago. I started saying that the other day and it took off. So I
like it. That works. It makes a whole lot of sense. Just don't think about it too hard.
Yes. But no, you're right.
Yeah. I think the big problem though is, like, you know, when you don't think about it, and all, and as Jane said, when you just say we're going to drill and we're going to do this, and then when you try to offer just even a small bit of advice or a small bit of information on this, it then becomes, well, you're wrong. You're just fake. Why don't you want us to have energy independence? Well, I mean, I'm not saying we don't take in oil exports from other countries, but we are rather, we have a lot of oil that we can drill, that we've been drilling for ourselves. Am I wrong?
No, that is exactly right.
Yeah. So this narrative of like energy independence, it sounds really good and it sounds great if you love America, and I love America, but it also just is a false narrative. And going to, like, mentioning the prices too, is like one of the things that Donald Trump said he was going to do. I don't think he said it on day one, but he did say he was going to do this, was cut energy prices in half. I just need to know, because you're an expert, has that happened?
No.
Okay.
No, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
Well, and let's go, because we talked about this with you before, and again, for people who are not familiar with you, Matt Randolph is an oil and gas industry expert. This is something that you have to earn. Mm-hmm. It's not like you get to be self-title yourself this thing. You actually have to earn it, and he's got 30 years experience in the oil and gas industry, so he knows of what he speaks. But again, a lot of those things just sound good. When he first talked about cutting oil and energy by 50%, you essentially said, well, then we're going to stop producing natural gas. We're going to stop doing all these things, because if energy producers don't make any money, what is their incentive to do these things?
Yeah, and, you know, we've done the math on this. You know, oil would have to be below $20 a barrel to cut the price of gasoline in half. And I was interviewed by a gentleman named S.V. Date with the Huffington Post, and did an article that was back before the election. And when I told him this, it just blew his mind. And I'm like, there's no cutting gas prices in half. That's just not a thing. Like, it's 2025 and inflation is a thing that exists, right? Mm-hmm. And you're wanting prices to go back to like what they were 60 years ago. Nothing costs what it did 60 years ago when adjusted for inflation, right?
Right.
it's just, and you have to think in terms of how an oil company thinks. You know, we go back to this LNG thing and all this oil in Alaska. If you was to ask anybody, you know, what's an oil and gas disaster, you know, the Exxon Valdez would be one they would bring up, right?
Sure.
And when was that? 1980, I think, was 45 years ago or so. I could be off a little bit on that. But the fact of the matter is that disaster was minuscule compared to Deepwater Horizon. But people will still think of Valdez first, mm-hmm. because it's in Alaska. It's in a place that people view as beautiful in nature. This is another reason companies don't want to expand their businesses up there, because in their mind, hey, if we have a disaster along the Gulf of Mexico, people will talk about it for 6 months. But if we have a disaster in Alaska, people are going to talk about it for 50 years. They literally think about this stuff, mm-hmm. right? And that's why we're...
Whoops.
He got so...
Somebody yanked Mr. Global off our live stream.
Oh my God, Jane. They were all right.
He was here and now he's gone. We will try to reconnect with Mr. Global on the live stream and get him back on the air. We've never had this problem with Mr. Global before.
But that was just mid-sentence, too. Like, usually they have the decency to freeze up first so we have an idea.
No,
but
he was
just
gone.
Like magic. But that kind of blows my mind that... that Alaska, and I looked it up, and it happened in 1989, the Exxon Valdez spill. And it's almost like, and I will confirm with him once he returns, it's almost like a marketing thing, too, is like Alaska is dangerous to drill in because if there, oh, he's back. There he is.
There we go.
Welcome back, Mr. Global.
Yes. I got lucky.
So you were saying before the internet had its way, that they take into mind about doing work in Alaska because of the history there with Exxon Valdez, and that it almost seems, and forgive me if I don't want to sound insulting to them or anybody, but it's almost like a marketing thing too. It's like the marketing of Alaska for oil is hard because everyone immediately goes to that.
Yes.
Well, and it's
the same reason. It's the same reason they can't get any traction in Anwar, right? It's if Anwar was in West Texas, everybody would want a piece of it because it's West Texas.
Explain what Anwar is for folks who don't know.
The Alaska National Wildlife Refuge that Donald Trump keeps trying to open up for oil and gas drilling, and nobody will buy any leases. You know, we've done this 3 times now. Had lease sales up there. They think there's a lot of oil there. It's completely unproven. It's north and west or north and east of Prudhoe Bay. It's an untouched area of Alaska where Trump is convinced we need to drill. I don't know why Trump thinks he knows anything about where we need to drill, but nobody wants to go there. It is a hot button issue. It's a topic. It would create, you know, believe it or not, as bad as a reputation as big oil companies have, they do care about their image and their brand, and they're not going. That's the last thing they need is to look even worse.
So what you're saying that is that these leases are available to drill in these areas, but oil and gas companies are like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Let somebody else stick their neck out. Again, on the off chance that something goes wrong, and that's going to stay in the public's memory for a really long time. By the way, it's really interesting to me, and I know that you're right about the Exxon Valdez staying in folks' memories more than the Deepwater Horizon rupture, but I remember watching the film of that thing just gushing oil for days, and it was horrific.
Yeah.
But you're right, it was under the surface, and we didn't necessarily see the poor seabirds covered in oil, so it didn't have the same impact.
It's I don't call it vanity, call it whatever, but if something terrible happens out in the desert of Texas, people don't care as much as if it happens in the forest in Alaska. It's, you know what I mean? That's just human nature. There's nothing wrong with it. That's just how it is.
And now it's a monetized business. It's called optics. Called optics. And yeah, I mean, that makes, I can't believe I'm about to say this. That actually makes me feel something of love for these oil companies to say, you know what? We don't need to go to Anwar to do this. We don't need to, we don't need to risk this for, as you said, unproven oil amounts that could also affect that part of the world and the animals that live in it.
Well, and as you said too, Matt, drilling is really expensive, and exploration in and of itself is very, very expensive.
Yeah, and no place more expensive than where Donald Trump wants them to do it. And we're laying down rigs in places where it's fairly cheap to drill. We're certainly not going to be doing any drilling in the most expensive places in the world to drill. Like, it's just...
It's not a thing.
Yeah.
They don't get it. They don't get it.
Yeah. And one of the things I think, I can't speak for Jane or Kelvin here, one of the things I've learned is that, you know, and it sounds crazy, but like, you know, these oil companies just, they don't want to drill oil. They want to make money, and making money comes from drilling oil, and they're going to drill oil when they can find, and they do the research. I mean, how long of research do they do on a piece of property before they even put a bit of equipment down to find out this is how much we can get, this is how much we can net, and we're going to make a profit? If not, we're going to move on to another part of the country or the world.
Yeah, and with today's technology, it's very fast. It's,
yeah.
Data mining systems built with AI. It used to be years, now it's days. So,
We're going to continue our conversation with Matt Randolph. He is Mr. Global Oil and Gas Industry Expert. You can always join us at 855-752-4842. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. It is Monday. We're joined by Matt Randolph, Mr. Global Oil and Gas Industry Expert, and we were talking about the pipeline in Alaska that the Trump administration is all touting now, and we wanted to talk a little bit about gas prices, too.
Yeah, in the previous section, Matt, we were talking about the notion of basically cutting the prices of energy in half, and one of the things that people always talk about, and it's a real thing, it's gas prices, and we've talked extensively about gas prices here, but and you discussed the point of when prices of oil are low, that's when gas prices can go down, but that also means that the oil companies aren't making a profit. And I want to harken back to 2020, where some of us were paying 89, 99 cents a gallon for gas because the demand was so low, the price of oil was so far down. What damage did that do to oil companies as far as like their bottom line? I mean, like I'm asking the question basically, it's like, this is why we won't see gas prices lower that low, because they can't afford to do that, period.
Must be muted, Matt.
Technology.
Got me?
Yep.
Okay. The first time in history, oil prices went negative.
Wow.
And then when they stopped being negative, they were still like, $10, $15, $20 a barrel. We had the largest oversupply of oil and gas we've ever had in history. And they couldn't hardly give the stuff away, right? But they were losing their shirts.
Now we lost you again.
Matt, you're muted again.
There we go.
There we go.
Now we
got rid
you.
Of the mic.
There we go.
Yeah. But yeah, we oil went negative and then it was really low and companies were losing their shirt. And if you're paying 99 cents for a gallon of gas, you're pretty much just paying the taxes on it. Like nobody's making any money. But just in my, I live in one of the cheapest states in the country for gas. And if I was paying 99 cents, it's everyone in the supply chain is losing money except for the tax collectors. There's no profit anywhere. And, but we would have, the world would have to completely stop for us to get back to those prices again. There's no possibility of that happening with people still driving and business going on, on a normal function every day. That's just, it's not a thing that can happen.
Yeah. I guess my point, and that's the point I like to make to people, is like, there's no incentive for oil companies to cut
their own profits,
yeah, to create a world in which we pay far less and they somehow make money. If that's, yeah, as we said, it's not a thing. So,
yeah, I mean, we're already laying down rigs like crazy. I think we're up to about 40 rigs we've lost since Trump took office. And, that's with oil between $60 and $65. Because inflation exists with companies too, right? $65, $60 today doesn't, how far does it get you, right? Not very far. That's so essentially where oil prices are today are below $40, where if you looked back 5, 6, 7 years ago, we're having the same effect as sub-$40 oil. So we're going to lose more rigs. We're going to lose oil production. And, you know, gas prices will probably continue to fall, but it's not going to be a great thing.
855-752-4842 if you'd like to join the conversation. Jack from Merrimack. Jack, we got about 2 minutes left. Thank you for joining us. What did you want to say?
Well, I had a couple of things, but let's just look at this. Can Matt explain what the depletion allowance is and how it works, please?
Did you hear that, Matt?
Yes. So the depletion allowance is one of the tax deductions that oil companies are allowed to take. So let's say you have, we'll just try to keep it simple. Let's say you have, you know, 10 acres of mineral rights, and there's a specific amount of oil and gas that is expected to be in that 10 acres, and you own that oil and gas, right? As it depletes, the value of that asset is dropping, and you get to take a tax deduction on the loss of the value of that asset. Does that make sense?
Does that explain it for you, Jack?
It would.
That explains what it is, but why is it? Because you're producing, you're getting profits from that oil that's been pumped out of there.
Exactly. I didn't say it was fair or correct. I just said this is what it is.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it's just like the intangible drilling cost deduction. You know, you're getting all of this value, but you're getting to write off 100% of that as well. So yeah, I understand.
We had another question on the live stream, Matt, and I don't know how much time we're going to have to get into this. We only got about a minute left. RFK1 says, what would happen if oil and gas became a public utility nonprofit? What would the price be then? Maybe we should mull on this and we can bring you back and kick it around next time. Because, again, we only have about a minute left unless you want to try and touch this real quickly.
That's about an hour conversation. There you
go. Go to his YouTube channel. Go find Mr. Global on YouTube. There's tons and tons of fantastic videos there.
I would suggest also watching his story, Mr. Global's story. That's a great half an hour video of his origin story.
Absolutely. Matt Randolph is Mr. Global. Thank you so very much, Matt. Hopefully we'll get you back on in a couple. We have news coming up next. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.